delicious, freshest, and healthiest drinking water anytime, even while traveling, during outdoor sporting activities, and in hospital filtration environments such as local or national emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Light removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals your body needs.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Brian Rosner, and we're going to be talking about Lyme disease. Now, of course, a lot of people say, well, Lyme disease, who cares about that? But you should care about Lyme disease, because there are probably between 1 and 2 million Americans who are afflicted with this terrible disease. And, of course, they go from doctor to doctor looking for help. And unfortunately, most doctors aren't in a position to help them because there's been an organized effort to conceal the true nature of this disease. Oh, doctors will recognize the acute phase of the disease. And if you happen to have a positive blood test, they'll be able to recognize it. But most of the people are not in the acute phase. They do not have a chronic blood test. They are chronically disabled. But, well, I'm going to have you hear about Brian has to say, because he can speak from first-hand experience. Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Good to talk to you again.
Why don't you just go ahead and tell our listeners just a little bit about Lyme disease and about your personal experience with it?
Sure. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier, why should anyone care about Lyme disease? Well, you only have to look down the street at that neighbor you have that might have chronic fatigue syndrome, or the friend of a friend that might have fibromyalgia, or even a school child that you know that might have autism. That's one of the problems with Lyme disease, is it's a very pervasive, very sneaky disease that can manifest as a lot of different types of things. We all know that you can get Lyme disease from the bite of a tick, and, you know, when you're camping or hunting, but that's not where it ends. And most people think that, you know, if I'm not a hunter, if I'm not out and camping and, you know, rummaging through the woods, then I'm not at risk for it. But today we're going to talk about just a lot of misunderstandings and misconceptions about Lyme disease. For example, Lyme disease can be transmitted by other insects, not just ticks. It can also be transmitted by sexual contact, and there's even some evidence that it can be transmitted through breast milk and start at a very young age. So there's the transmission aspect that's very difficult. On my website at lymebook.com, that's L-Y-M-E-B-O-O-K.com, I have a whole list of these misunderstandings and misinterpretations. Another problem with Lyme disease is that the symptoms can be very elusive and very confusing, and so there isn't any one set of symptoms. You know, when you have a really bad sore throat, you might go check yourself for strep throat, but Lyme disease is not like strep throat. Some people can get, the typical joint pain and headaches and fevers, but other people, you know, right after the infection, it can go into their central nervous system, and they can start to develop things like Tourette's syndrome, obsessive compulsive disorder, schizophrenia, and things like that. My own, personal experience with Lyme disease was much like that. I was going from doctor to doctor to doctor for literally years, I might even say decades, and spending all of my savings and just feeling really destitute and miserable, and none of the doctors that I ever encountered had even heard of Lyme disease, let alone tested me for it, until finally, luckily, it was pure luck. There was nothing, logical about it. I happened to be at a Lyme, we call them Lyme literate medical doctors. We actually have a special name for these doctors, Lyme literate medical doctor. The acronym is LLMD. And he said, you know, I'm going to test you for Lyme disease. The test came back blaring positive, and I found out I had Lyme disease. And then you think, oh, this is great. My troubles are over. I know what's wrong with me. Well, they're not. The next challenge with Lyme disease is how do you treat this thing? And it's very, very complicated and difficult to treat. And so that's another area that that is confusing and complex about this illness. So, you know, Dr. Stan, it's really important that anybody listening now, if you have a loved one or a friend or even you've had some health problems over the years, we're not saying it is Lyme disease. There are lots of other...
Hold that thought. Brian, we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Brian Rosner. We're talking about Lyme disease and something that everybody should be concerned about because there's been a conscious, organized, orchestrated effort to conceal the truth from practicing physicians. Physicians really want to take care of their patients. Most of them are wonderful people, totally dedicated. But unfortunately, the way medicine is organized today, there are people at the key positions in government, key positions within organized medicine, with the people who put on the meetings, the people who publish the journals, and they don't want this information to get out. And you'd say, why would that possibly be? Well, very, very simply, because the first cases of Lyme disease occurred at a place called Lyme, Connecticut, right across the inlet from a government biowarfare laboratory on something called Plum Island. They can't let the American people know that all of the evidence suggests this is simply one of these terrible diseases they've created for chronic diseases they credit. If you don't believe they create chronic diseases, you need to try to get a copy of a book written by Zbigniew Brzezinski back in 1970. Zbigniew Brzezinski was chief foreign policy advisor to President Carter, and he is working behind the scenes, one of the chief advisors to Barack Obama today. I mean, he is one of the people who pulls the strings, who rules the world, organized the Trilateral Commission. But back in 1970, Zbigniew Brzezinski, in his book, Between Two Ages, in a footnote at the bottom, somewhere between page 55 and 65, talked about how in the future, why we're going to be able to create storms and droughts and new chronic diseases. And we know, of course, they've been working on those. We know that the military has been working on creating new chronic diseases to disable the enemy. And whether it was an accident it got out, we don't know. But this is much more than simply the Borrelia spirochete, because many of these involve other genetically created organisms like Mycoplasma fermentis. And this overlaps. Lyme disease overlaps with chronic fatigue and chronic fibromyalgia and Gulf War illness and a myriad of other diseases that are really disabling so many of our people. An interesting study in thought control is go to Amazon.com and try to get a copy of Between Two Ages by Zbigniew Brzezinski. It originally cost about $6. I have my copy. I wonder what happened to all the copies of Zbigniew Brzezinski's book that talks about how within 30 years, now remember that was 1970, almost 39 years ago, within 30 years we'll be able to create new chronic diseases to disable the enemy. We'll be right back. Well, Brian, you go ahead and pick up the story. And certainly, what do we know about the origin of, what do we know for certain about the origin of Lyme disease?
Well, that's funny that you threw the word certain in there, because we know a lot, but I can't say that we know a lot for certain. You're absolutely right that Lyme disease was first discovered near a government weapons research facility, and there's a lot of speculation, none of it confirmed, but there's some pretty good evidence that it did indeed result, the spread to U.S. citizens did indeed result from a leak or a security breakdown or some type of an issue with that facility. The first cases of Lyme disease were discovered in a city that's actually named after it, or I should say the disease is named after the city, Lyme, Connecticut. And it was a mother who is still alive and well today, and a friend of hers actually wrote a book on the first cases of Lyme disease. I believe it's called The Widening Circle. The disease basically started in children and a few adults, and they had swollen knees, and none of the people around knew what to do about it, and they brought in a few infectious disease specialists, and those specialists finally figured out that, you know, this was a quote-unquote new disease. Now, you know, if it really was new or if it was just a bioweaponized mistake or tragedy, we don't know, but there are a lot of aspects of the disease that would point to it being used for biowarfare. It doesn't kill people really at all. It just debilitates people and completely renders them useless from a physical and cognitive standpoint. So if you had an enemy and you didn't want to flat out wipe them out because that would be too obvious and it would bring too much wrath from, you know, the UN and other parts of the world, but if you had an enemy and you wanted to just sort of mute them a little bit and make their soldiers incapacitated and slow them down and just kind of make a whole civilization fall apart slowly, that's what Lyme disease really does. It's kind of a long-term chronic thing, but, you know, for the people who are suffering with it in the States right now, they don't care where it came from and how it started. They just don't want to know how to get better, and that's where a lot of my research focuses. My best-selling book called The Top 10 Lyme Disease Treatments, you can get it at lymebook.com or on Amazon. That goes into some answers that I found after about 6 or 7 years of full-time research, as both as a patient myself and as a journalist and as someone who corresponds with some top researchers and physicians. But it turns out that a lot of the, even the educated doctors that know what they're doing and that are very familiar with Lyme, a lot of these types of doctors just put people on antibiotics for years and years at a time, and while many of those people do get better, it's just a very hard, harsh treatment that has a lot of side effects, is very expensive. It just isn't quite optimized, in my opinion, for the treatment of long-term Lyme, and that's what my book is about. It's about how to balance, you know, the conventional long-term antibiotic treatment with some other alternative treatments that can take kind of the edge off of the side effects of that long-term treatment plan. Now, I would say that to anybody who's listening to this, the standard belief and one that I share is that antibiotics are mandatory for somebody who has Lyme. This is a very dangerous bacteria, and the antibiotics are the staple of the treatment, but that's not where it ends, and you should really do your homework and look into some of the other options. We actually have a book coming out this summer written by Connie Strathheim, who's another healthcare journalist. And this book is a one-of-a-kind, you know, really great resource. It has interviews with 14 of the top Lyme physicians in the country. And Connie really was tirelessly, you know, seeking answers, and she spent hours and hours interviewing these doctors to get at exactly what they do and which treatments they use and why they work. And so we're really excited about that book coming out. That should be out in August or September. You can sign up for our newsletter to get announcements when that book becomes available at lymebook.com/newsletter.
Well, why don't you give me a call when it does come out, and we'll do some more programs, because we think this is an important issue. Now, the disease started simply back in Lyme, Connecticut, but has gradually spread across our country, and certainly we have it in many, many of the counties here, and in California we have it right here in the county where I live, Santa Cruz County. But what we're finding is that now, of course, many of the ticks and the other insects that carry this are carrying other of these chronic diseases, because it's not, I mean, if it was just Borrelia, why, of course, this would, you know, be would not that bad. But aren't many of the people have multiple infections?
Yes, and that's a mistake that I made when I wrote my first book, was I didn't focus enough on what we call co-infections. That's the buzzword that we use in the Lyme disease world to describe these other infections. They're called co-infections. There was a study by Yale University a couple years ago, and they found some ticks and opened them up and found that there was anywhere from 18 to 200 different types of pathogenic, dangerous, infectious microbes in all of these ticks. And believe it or not, many of these 18 to 200 hadn't even been identified yet. They had to name them all because they're new bugs, new bacteria, new viruses and protozoa that don't even have never even been identified. So you get this what we call infection stew going on inside somebody, and it has a synergistic effect and totally ruins the immune system and totally muddies the waters of how treatment should go and what things doctors would be able to use. Some of the common ones, like you mentioned, are mycoplasma, Ehrlichia, anaplasma, Babesia, Brucella, Bartonella, and these are all, the medical community is just now starting to dawn on the understanding of these microorganisms, and they're just highly complicated and chronic and what we call subclinical infections. And that's a very important thing to focus on is the word subclinical. When you go to the doctor and you have, let's say, a raging case of strep throat, it's what we call clinical. They can find it. They can culture it from the back of your throat. They can test it. They can treat it. They can look it in their book and figure out what it is. That's a clinical infection. A subclinical infection means that these infections are too sneaky and too low grade to be properly detected by your doctor. And so your doctor is going to tell you that you're crazy and that there's nothing wrong with you. And all the while, you know that you're a little bit tired and you're achy and your stomach's not working right and you can't breathe well. And you know that it's not in your head. You know your body. You know that this is real. But that's what they're going to tell you because this is a quote-unquote subclinical infection.
And, of course, the thing is that people, their brain doesn't work well. Everything is sort of foggy. They're just tired all the time. All they want to do is sleep. And it's just an effort to do anything. And, I mean, I've talked to people who've had these various manifestations of this complex I've described, which certainly overlaps chronic fatigue and Lyme disease and fibromyalgia and Gulf War illness. And there's a myriad of illnesses that all fit in together, and they're all characterized by these symptoms. And certainly what happens, it has to do with the mitochondria. Would you like to explain to our listeners the part that, first of all, what a mitochondria is, and then the part that the mitochondria play, the damage the mitochondria play in this symptom complex that we see that is so disabling?
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring up the cognitive function, because if a government was going to try to make a bio-warfare device, organism of some type, it sure would make sense, wouldn't it, to try to attack somebody's cognitive abilities, because if you can't think, you certainly can't defend yourself or expose any wrongdoings or things like that. And that is also a problem with Lyme disease, is that most Lyme sufferers are so mentally out of it, they can't even properly self-care and self-manage their own treatment programs, and they have a hard time making any money, managing finances, and that type of thing. Now, regarding the mitochondria, that is that's what we call the powerhouse or the energy production part of the cell in every body, and almost all of these diseases do involve mitochondria dysfunction, which basically means that your energy, your furnace, your engine in your body is impaired, and so you can't function. The energy production in your body doesn't work, and so everything that most people take for granted, like taking out the trash, answering the phone, doing your taxes, you just can't do those things because you don't have any energy.
Well, the mitochondria are little tiny filaments that you see in the cells. And they're sort of like a battery. They're what electrifies the cells and gets it to functioning. And you damage the battery, this cell doesn't function well. And these diseases we mentioned, seem to have one of their primary targets, the mitochondria. And, of course, this would be in your muscle cells, your heart cells, but your brain and neurological cells as well. These are terrible diseases. And most people have no idea how prevalent there are. How many people do you think that are suffering from Lyme disease today? Do we have any idea?
Well, that's a good question. I did a presentation at a conference a couple years back, and I did a whole bunch of research on that question. And what I came up with was pretty interesting. The Centers for Disease Control, which is the official government organization that tracks statistics on this, they show an exponentially rising incidence of Lyme disease since about 1991. They show, the cases just going up dramatically since then. But when you dig a little bit deeper, it turns out that the way that they report Lyme disease is inaccurate. And even somebody with a positive Lyme test won't count according to what we call the CDC criteria. They have this very strict criteria, and if you don't fall within it completely, exactly, very dogmatically, then they don't even count your case. And then you have all the people who never even get tested because they don't even know what Lyme disease is and they don't even suspect it. And so you really miss a lot of the people that are sick. But the CDC reported in 2006, that's the last year that I have numbers for, about 25,000 new cases of Lyme disease. But many of the experts in the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients and the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society and places like that estimate that that number probably is about 10 times higher. So you guess about 200,000 cases per year in 2005.
Well, but how many people are afflicted with it? You may have 200,000 a year, but how many people are really afflicted?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, if there's 200,000 a year, that's not really the end of the world. But you think that most of these people don't get proper treatment, and even if they
hold that thought. Sure. I'll be right back. Well, Brian, you picked the story up there.
Sure, yeah. We were just saying how there's probably about 200,000 new cases of Lyme disease per year in the United States. And although that doesn't sound like a huge number, you got to remember that a lot of these people are not getting better and they're not even being identified. And so that number builds up every year. And you've got about 20 years of data there. And so you multiply 200,000 times 20 and you get a number of 4 million. And that really means that pretty much 1 in 100 Americans has Lyme disease. And that means that everybody who's listening to this program knows somebody who has Lyme disease, and it's just as big of a problem as anything else that we have as common household names like diabetes and autism and those types of things. It really is on that level, and people in 10 or 20 years from now, when this is uncovered, will that's the way that they'll be talking about it.
And it's a major problem in our society. And the biggest problem, of course, is the patient who goes from doctor to doctor and nobody can figure out what he has, because all of these are just vague symptoms. Now, if he has arthritis, swelling of a joint, something the doctor can see. But if the doctor can't see it, he's just complaining, of feeling tired at all. And most people really don't even think of Lyme disease, because the symptoms really mirror those of chronic fatigue. But many times they can have severe diarrhea. But it's the mental problems and just the general fatigue that really gets them. So what sort of things can people do to help themselves? And I know you've written a book on the 10 most important treatments for Lyme disease.
Well, there's some basic categories of treatment that are important. The first one is obviously antimicrobial treatment, where you would take one or more, usually combinations of antibiotics. And those antibiotics might be pharmaceutical, they might be natural, or they might be a combination of both. And that's the mainstay of the treatment. Now, you've got to remember, too, that the Lyme disease bacteria comes in three forms that they have identified in the laboratory. It comes in a spirochete form, a cell wall deficient, or what we call an L form, and also in a cyst, which is a dormant form that's hardly susceptible to anything. And so that's why there are these combinations of antibiotics that are required. Again, also you have the co-infections that we talked about, and that's also why so many different antibiotics are available. Now, we would need a lot more time to go into all of the different types of antibiotics. I have become an expert in antibiotics. I know every little detail about all the different classes, the tetracyclines, macrolides, cephalosporins, lincosamides. I mean, all of them. There are just so many different avenues. But hopefully what you'll be able to do is find what we call a Lyme-literate physician who also knows all of that information about the antibiotics and who can get you on your way to health. Now, Lyme disease bacteria produce a waste product that is a neurotoxin. It's highly toxic to the human brain, and you have to get that toxin out of the body. So various detoxification methods are also important. Anything that helps the liver to function better, because the liver is basically your toxin filter in your body, is also important, such as my favorite and the one that has the most research is milk thistle herb. It's fairly affordable. You can get it at a health food store. Keep in mind, I am not a physician, so I'm talking about these things from an informational standpoint, but you can have a physician help prescribe these items for you. another great detox.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, please. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Brian Rosner. We're talking about Lyme disease, a disease that's very prevalent, according to Brian Wise. The experts think there's probably about 200,000 new cases every year. But, of course, when you stop and think, this has been going on since the early 1990s, why we've got an awful lot of people in the United States with chronic Lyme disease, and it is spreading. It's spread all across the country. Started over there in Lyme, Connecticut, and just across the inlet on the other side, I believe on Long Island, or back there in the New York area. And then gradually just spread, and now, of course, it's literally all over this country. Brian, is it in other nations as well? Or do we see it in other nations?
Yes, it is, and I just submitted a article to the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients, which is a very important alternative medicine journal, and the very title of the article, it's an excerpt from one of my books, is called The Worldwide Prevalence of Lyme Disease, and it is amazing. Anyone with a computer in a few hours can go to PubMed, which is where all of the published medical studies are archived, and you can do a search for Lyme disease and Africa. Well, actually, you're going to want to do a search for the name of the bacteria, Borrelia Africa, Borrelia Sweden, Borrelia South America, and you will find endless studies of this bacteria present there. Now, it's slightly different on each continent, and nobody quite knows why. It behaves a little bit differently, has different symptoms, and responds to different treatments, but it is very prevalent, and you know, I'm able to track sometimes where my books are sold. And, you know, my books get sold all over the world, and it's pretty fascinating how widespread the problem really is.
Yeah, well, just like the HIV virus, there are actually eight different ones, all occurred spontaneously, all at exactly the same time in nations all over the world, and you'll wonder where it all came from. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Now, Brian was saying that the primary line of treatment is antibiotics. And, of course, you need to be in the hands of somebody who knows what they're doing. You can use regular antibiotics or you can use the alternative types of antibiotics, various herbs and other things that will attack these organisms. But you very often will have not simply the Borrelia, the spirochete, this new spirochete that didn't exist before and suddenly is occurring all over the world in different forms. Gee, I wonder how that could have happened. But then, of course, there are other treatments as well. So, first of all, as far as the antibiotic treatment is concerned, that's really up in the hands of the doctor who is going to be treating you. This is not something you can really treat on your own. But what about the alternative types of microbial products that are available, herbal things, other things that will tend to kill these spirochetes and viruses and bacteria?
Well, it's interesting. You know, one of the goals of a Lyme sufferer is to be able to treat themselves in a way that I call sustainable. You know, we talk about sustainable, we use that word with the environment. You know, we want sustainable fuel and sustainable food and things, and what that means is that it's not going to trash the world as we use it. It's not, you know, these fossil fuels that supposedly are going to, you know, wreak havoc. Whether you believe that or not, that's a different story. But in Lyme disease, you want to do the same thing. You want to have a sustainable treatment plan that doesn't trash the body. And that means that you have to become educated on how and why and what you can do for a long time, years at a time, because that's how long it's going to take to get over Lyme disease. And so that's part of what my books are about. You can learn more about my book at limebook.com. It's L-Y-M-E. But I can list, you know, a few of the simple, you know, natural substances. One, for example, is colloidal silver. For years, we've all known that colloidal silver is a very powerful antimicrobial substance, but, you know, the powers that be in the medical industry doesn't want that information to get out because it's very hard to profit from colloidal silver. It can be made with about $2 worth of materials, and there's really no way to patent it because silver is just an element, and it's free to anybody, well, not free, but available to anybody who wants it. The drug companies can't make money on it. And actually, the amount of silver that you need to make colloidal silver practically is free. You can get, you know, something that's the size of a penny, and that'll make colloidal silver for years and years. But anyway, that's one of them. There are companies that sell colloidal silver, and there are some that are of higher quality than others. And, you know, you'll talk to a lot of Lyme sufferers who say, yeah, colloidal silver saved my life after the other antibiotics stopped working. You have herbs like olive leaf extract, oregano oil, artemisinin, and, you know, a huge long list of herbs. And some people, you know, think that we're crazy for recommending so many different herbs, but these bacteria become resistant quickly, and so you constantly have to be rotating your herbal protocol, and that's why we need so many different options. It's not just a matter of, you know, a 10-day course of antibiotics.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course our guest is Brian Rosner. We're talking about a Lyme disease, a disease that inflicts an awful lot of people. And of course, really, is it possible to differ the people with chronic fatigue from Lyme disease, or do they sort of, and fibromyalgia, do they sort of all meld into one?
Well, they really do meld into one, and it all comes back to this sneaky spirochete that can, it's actually shaped like a drill bit if you look at it under the microscope. That's why they call it a spirochete. That actually means drill bit in the original language. And it all comes back to the sneaky spirochete that can drill into all of your different body tissues, and it ends up going to where you have genetic weaknesses. And so some people might get more of it in their muscles, some people might get more of it in their brain or lungs, and that's why it can cross over into all of these other...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brian Rosner. We're talking about Lyme disease, and of course, as it relates to all of these other chronic disabling disease, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, Gulf War illness... They all interlock. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question on this subject, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But before we get to that, why, Brian, I'd like you to get your telephone number out, I'd like you to get your website out so people would know how they can get your information.
Sure. My website, where you can get a lot of free information on Lyme disease and related topics, is www.lymebook.com. That's L-Y-M-E, book, B-O-O-K.com. You can also give us a call here, and we can try to help you out and see if there's any of our resources that might be helpful to you. Our number is 530-541-7200, and the name of the book that I wrote on this topic, I've written four books, but this is the most relevant. It's called The Top 10 Lyme Disease Treatments. You can get that on my website at lymebook.com or just do a search on amazon.com.
Well, it's an excellent book. Now, basically, let's get into the other treatments. You mentioned the antibiotics. That's sort of the first line of defense. Or the other products, these herbal products, certainly oil of oregano, olive leaf extract. These others have been known for many years to boost the immune system. And certainly garlic, things like that, they're all immune boosters, and certainly there are various combinations of them you can get. You mentioned you like colloidal silver, but I'm not really crazy about colloidal silver, but let's get on to some of the other treatments. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, we had talked a little bit about detoxification, and that was, you know, you have to have a multi-pronged approach when you treat Lyme disease, and one thing I was about to mention was a sauna. Saunas are an excellent way to detoxify. They're very affordable. Anybody can find a source of heat. Some people build saunas in their closet with ceramic heaters, and that's a way to go too, as long as you're careful about the fire hazard. But saunas allow the body to completely bypass the liver, and the liver is often overstressed anyway, and all these toxins, instead of having to be filtered through the liver, they just come right out of the skin. And that's a way that you can get some of this junk out of your system. There are a number of other antimicrobial substances. One of them is TOA-free cat's claw. Cat's claw is an herb from the Amazon jungle that some people are familiar with. It has very strong anti-spirochetal properties. Something else that is a great, great product that many people should look into is a systemic enzyme product called Wobenzym. And basically what that is, I can give a short breakdown of it, but you know, some people take digestive enzymes to help with their digestion. They're very similar to enzymes that the pancreas secretes, and they break down proteins. But if you take these enzymes on an empty stomach, which a lot of people are doing now, what they do is they get absorbed systemically into the blood, and they actually digest proteins throughout your body. Now, some people might say, I don't want to do that. They're going to digest my body and my organs. Well, that's not true. Your body has anti-protein enzymes that make sure that these enzymes won't hurt your native tissues. But all of the junk that Lyme disease causes, and all of the neurotoxins, and even the bacteria themselves, they do not have protection from these enzymes. And so to take this on an empty stomach and have them be systemically absorbed is one way to get these enzymes into your system. They're very affordable. The brand that I like, I have no financial affiliation with them. It's Wobenzym, W-O-B-E-N-Z-Y-M. You can find that on your favorite herb shop. Usually I use iHerb.com. It's a really low price. They ship right here from California. I usually get my orders in about 2 days. So that's another treatment option that you should be aware of. You know, the listeners by now can tell that this is a multi-pronged approach. Another product that is very beneficial is colostrum. And colostrum is the, as many people know, it's the first substance that a nursing mother, produces in her breast milk within a few days of the birth of a baby. And a lot of us weren't properly breastfed, and our immune systems aren't working properly. And so to supplement, we usually supplement with bovine, which is from a cow, colostrum. And there's a number of different good quality supplement companies that make bovine colostrum, and that can get the immune system jump-started. I've used all of these products, and they've all helped me, you know, a great deal. And so these are some of the places that a person would look to find answers. Of course, when somebody is on long-term antibiotics, the gut flora ends up being completely decimated, and so you have to take probiotics, which are the beneficial bacteria that can replenish your small and large intestines. Be careful not to get ripped off. There are some very expensive and questionably effective probiotics. My favorite kinds are the kinds where you actually buy the bacteria in a powder and you put them in with yogurt. I'm sorry, not yogurt. It turns into yogurt. You put them in with the milk And there's certain instructions on how to cultivate them, and it turns into a yogurt that is highly rich in probiotics. All of the lactose has been digested by the bacteria and turned into lactase, and you can, you know, just kind of snack on this yogurt throughout the day, and it has done wonders for my digestion. Again, various brands of that. I don't like to promote specific brands on the air because I want to be clear that I'm not here to have any kind of commercial involvement with this industry, and it allows me to, you know, maintain credibility. But you can do some research on that and find that on your own. So these are some options.
All right, let's go to Annette, who's calling us from, looks like, West Virginia. Hi, Annette. What part are you from? West Virginia?
Yes, Middleburn, West Virginia.
All right, fine. Are you listening to us on the shortwave or the internet?
Yes, I am, and good evening, gentlemen. I had a miraculous recovery from polymyalgia rheumatica in using calcium bentonite clay, the very purest form that I could find, and it just pulled that toxicity out of my system. And I had, at first, I could see that it was working, and later on I combined it with a very fine magnesium substance, and I also combined it with green powdered green food so that it would also provide nutrition. But I had a combined problem. I not only had the polymyalgia rheumatica, but I had been electronically tortured for a year and a half, from 85 to mid 86, and that was in my system.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much. I appreciate you sharing that with us, Annette. And let's go to Michael, who's calling us from New York. Michael, are you upstate New York, listening there in Rochester?
No, I'm actually in Lower Hudson Valley, sir, Dutchess County, about midway between Albany and New York, pretty much right in the middle.
All right, fine. Well, it's good to have you with us. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I certainly do, sir, and I always appreciate your show, sir. You're great, and I appreciate so much what you do. And I'm listening to you over GCN Steve Quayle Internet connection.
Okay, fine.
Sir, I'm an herbalist, and I out here in this area of New York where Lyme is, you know, very prevalent, and I've had success with every case, and I've had quite a few dozen cases of Lyme over the years. I have an herbal formula called Infection Killer, and there's nothing like it around. Cleans house on any kind of infection, and does it quite quick. I've had people laid up in bed for 2 weeks or 1 week with Lyme, and just in 2 days, they're almost 100%.
Well, if you could just send me something on that, you certainly have been go to our radiolib.com or radioliberty.com and give me some information. We'd love to hear about it, Michael.
I just emailed you, sir, with subject Lyme, and just respond back, and I'll send you more information. And also, Brian, I'm going to touch base with you as well. I'd like to send you free samples, compliments of me. Put them to work.
Okay.
Put them to the test.
Okay, fine.
Okay, great, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Well,
God bless now.
Bye-bye. And certainly, a lot of people out there are looking for answers to these problems. Of course, the lady who called in first, Annette, has polymyalgia rheumatica, which is certainly not, this is an entirely different disease, fits into these autoimmune diseases, whereas Lyme is not autoimmune, it is primarily, an infectious disease. So you've got to be able to separate one disease from another. So basically, of course, we've been talking about the various types of treatment, and you've mentioned, of course, last the probiotic, and of course, anybody who is on antibiotics for a long period of time has to realize this will upset the natural flora. We have a natural bacteria that grow in our intestinal tract, and you destroy those, you get into real trouble, almost as bad as the primary disease you're treating. So you have to anticipate all of this, and this is all laid out, of course, in Brian's book on the 10 best treatments for Lyme disease. Was there anything else in the way of major categories of treatment you'd like to cover?
That's pretty much it for the amount of time that we have, is the antimicrobials and detoxification. Of course, there is also nutritional support that people have to consider. Lyme disease is a thief of the minerals in your body, and so people develop mineral deficiencies, and so getting on a multi-mineral can be very important. I've had a lot of people tell me that when they started taking magnesium, a lot of their symptoms just magically disappeared. It's kind of a myth that calcium is the one that it's always depleted. Of course, calcium is depleted in some healthy people that leads to, you know, problems in women especially, but in Lyme disease, it's magnesium that's really the problem. One comment on the woman who called in and, you know, her story about this detoxification helping her, you know, I hear that all the time, that people with these diseases, their bodies are so toxic that once they find the right avenue to get rid of those toxins, that they really, really can get better very fast. I mean, it's quite amazing. Somebody, you know, there's a new product that I'm still evaluating that's called Zeolite, and at first I was very skeptical of it. It sounded kind of like a scam to me, but I've been talking to everybody in my network who I trust and who doesn't sell anything and doesn't, you know, make any money doing this, and they've all said that the zeolite stuff has helped them a lot. And what it is it's actually made from volcanic deposits and volcanic rock, and it's highly absorptive and has a negative charge on it, and so it's attracted to all of the toxins, which all, of course, have positive charges. And that's, you know, one example of one of the detoxification products out there that really can help help, you know, people recover.
All right. Well, certainly, I think all of these things are excellent things to know about, to understand. Now, what about finding a Lyme literate doctor? And this is the biggest thing. Where can you actually get information so that you can find somebody who really specializes in this type of disease?
Yeah, that's an important question. Believe it or not, most of the current Lyme treating physicians out there do not want to be publicly identified. They're sort of walking a tightrope because the mainstream medical establishment and all the medical boards have not accepted chronic Lyme disease and are currently persecuting these doctors and trying to discipline them. So you need to get a special referral for a Lyme disease doctor. It is free to do that, and the organization that gives those out is the acronym is ILADS, I-L-A-D-S, stands for International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society. You can visit their website at ILADS.org. Again, that's I-L-A-D-S, ILADS.org. And they have a little link on there that says get a doctor referral. You fill out your information and they'll call somebody. I can't recommend enough, if you think you have Lyme disease, skip your local doctor. Even if you have the best doctor in the world that'll see you tomorrow, if he is not Lyme literate, he might be well-meaning, he might want to help you, but he's just not trained in Lyme disease. Now, one thing you can do for your local doctor that would be a great blessing to civilization as a whole is to try to help educate your doctor on Lyme disease by sending him or her to the ILADS website, or even better, ILADS had, as of last year, has a new program where they will pay the bill for your local physician to go to an ILADS conference to get educated. They'll pay for airfare and hotel, and I think that all your doctor will need to do is pick up some meals and some basic little expenses. That is how desperate these organizations are, getting huge $100,000 donations to send doctors and to get more and more Lyme literate doctors. And I'm happy to say that every day I talk to more and more physicians who are sort of entering into this education and have questions and are becoming Lyme literate, and it's a wonderful thing. But again, if you just are sick and you need a Lyme literate doctor, go to ILADS, ILADS.org, and you'll be able to get absolutely free of charge a referral to a physician in your area.
And I think it's important. You go to somebody who's used to dealing with this and will not simply say, oh, well, you know, chronic fatigue, you know, you probably, let's give you the little Prozac or something here. You'll feel better. Just take this pill, and you're not attacking the disease. But the symptoms are so vague, and believe me, I've practiced medicine for 35 years or more, and I used to hate to have people coming into my office with some of these incredible stories. I remember a dentist wife who came in and told me that she had had an automobile accident and hit from the rear. She had had a cervical sprain, but this precipitated chronic fatigue. And I thought that was the craziest story I ever heard. I have to be nice. Well, I found out, of course, it really is true. And suddenly you do something to interrupt the stability of the body, and suddenly people can develop these chronic diseases that have been in them. They've been latent, and I don't know whether that would be applicable with Lyme, but it certainly is applicable with the chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. People develop all of these symptoms, and people say, oh, my goodness, they're making this up because they got the insurance claim against the guy who hit him from behind. And you don't realize, of course, what they really are. They're really telling you the truth. And so frustrating because nobody will believe them.
Yeah, you know, the average person doesn't make up crazy stories about their health. Maybe there are some people that do that, but the average person is just a regular guy or gal that's, you know, living and has regular things happening, and they get broadsided by this, and all of a sudden there's these assumptions that they're crazy and trying to work the system. And I've talked to a lot of these people. They're not. They just want their life back. They just want, you know, a regular life. But what you say, Dr. Stan, is very, very true. Most doctors, they get someone like this in their office, and they just don't know where to start. They don't know what to do, and it's a lot easier to just shove a pill like Prozac or something in their hand or give them a referral. And these people end up getting shoved around in circles between specialists, and, you know, and it's just a huge, you know, crazy cycle. You mentioned the latency that can happen. It does happen in Lyme disease, absolutely, and car accidents and trauma very much trigger Lyme disease relapses and worsening. And, you know, this is a highly advanced, very, very hardy bacteria that will capitalize on weaknesses and opportunities in the host. And this happened to me personally. I had a period of a few different traumas, physical traumas that happened to me, and all of these little health problems that I had had for a long time exploded into what was full-blown Lyme disease.
And I've really talked through the years to a number of very, very capable individuals, you know, who had their lives just shattered by getting one of these chronic infections. And first, fortunately, most of those that we'd talked to were on the mend. But we're talking about years and years of disability, total disruption of their lives, their marriages, their family life. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Well, Brian, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What are the thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Sure. The biggest things to remember are that Lyme disease is not an uncommon disease. It's very common. And you sort of have to put on your thinking cap and not just believe everything that the doctors and everybody tells you. And you have to kind of look around and do some thinking for yourself. And you'll see that there are a lot of sick people with undiagnosed problems. And in many cases, it does turn out to be Lyme disease. Again, another important summary item from our hour together is where to get a Lyme-literate physician. If you don't know if you have Lyme or you think you do, don't waste your time with a doctor that doesn't know what they're doing. Go straight to the source. Spend your money on somebody that can help you. Again, ilads.org, ILADS.org is the doctor referral website. I have a number of resources on my website, too. Books, DVDs, articles, and things like that. You can read those at limebook.com. LYMEbook.com.
Well, we have a Lisa calling in from Santa Cruz. Lisa, did you have a question or comment?
Hi, yes, this is Lisa. I have two questions. I have fibromyalgia, and I have noticed on my worst days, my cat also doesn't seem to feel good, and I'm listening to you, and I'm wondering, I know animals can get Lyme, and I'm wondering, for a person with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue, what is the likelihood of Lyme disease in terms of percentage? Because you sure have my attention now.
Well, I'm not a doctor, so I can't advise you directly, but what I will say is it's highly likely that, that Lyme disease is the root of it, and it would probably be the best $100 or $200 you could spend to go to a Lyme-literate doctor and get tested and do what they call a therapeutic trial, where they will give you the treatment for Lyme disease and see how you do on it.
Wow, and then that would help the fibro and everything?
Well, again, you need to consult a licensed physician to answer that, but if I were you, I would definitely make an appointment with one.
I sure will, and I so appreciate both of you. It's really nice to hear people that understand all of this.
I know, and it's a little frustrating when you have this disability, and nobody thinks it's real because you don't see anything. There's nothing you can feel or touch. All you got is somebody comes complaining and says, I feel tired and weak and... Well, anyway, Lisa, at least look into this.
Bet I will. I'm determined, yeah.
God bless. Thanks very much for giving us a call. And certainly our guest has been Brian Rosner. His book, 10 Major Treatments for Lyme Disease. Excellent book, excellent information. Thank you so very much for being with us. Will you give us a call when the other book comes out? And that sounds like something we might really be interested in doing a program on.
I'd be happy to, Dr. Stan, and thanks again. It's been a pleasure, as always, to talk to you.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was, of course, Brian Rosner, and we're talking about Lyme disease, a very real problem. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, I hope you've enjoyed our interview with Brian. We do carry his book on the 10 best treatments for Lyme disease. We carry another book he's written on the connection between Lyme disease and autism, because many of the children who have autism have these chronic infections as well. So both of the books available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have a 4-tape set on Lyme disease, where we've talked to various people from various aspects of life who have the disease or have specialized in the disease or treat the disease. And so well, that's also available. It's simply called Lyme disease. And we also have a 4-tape set on chronic fatigue and certainly on AIDS, because many of the people, what they never tell you, what most doctors don't know, is that almost every patient with AIDS also has a chronic mycoplasma infection. So it's a dual infection, one HIV, oh, incidentally, 8 different types surfaced all around the world all at the same time, and nobody knows where they came from, but they can assure you it didn't come from a laboratory. And then, of course, but the HIV infections also have a mycoplasma, chronic mycoplasma fermentans. And, of course, who holds the patent on that disease? Well, the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. We have a great book entitled Project Daylily, written by one of the leading scientists in the country. And if you haven't read it, why, we recommend it to you. That's Project Daylily. And then, of course, we have a book on AIDS. AIDS, the Crime Beyond Belief by Don Scott, going into where did AIDS really come from? And, of course, what can be done at this stage? And you can't understand anything going on in the world today unless you understand that we're really up against dark and sinister spiritual forces. If you've not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that's Brotherhood of Darkness. Let me suggest you get it, or if you can't afford it, you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, and you're going to have to watch me talk for 2 hours. But I'm not the greatest talker, but the information in the talk, and you'll get it by simply going to our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, scroll down to videos, and then scroll down through videos to the Brotherhood of Darkness, and listen to it and understand what we are really up against. And it'll explain to you why they took God and prayer out of our schools and who took God and prayer out of our schools. Nobody's going to tell you these things. They're not going to tell you why we go to wars. They're not going to tell you why we have this financial collapse today. That is covered, of course, in my talk on the financial Armageddon and the syllabus that goes with that, we recommend. To really put this into perspective, we have 3 DVDs. They're very professionally done, called The Secret Mystery Set, and you can get them separately or together. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And if you look very closely, you'll see all these demon figures in the architecture of some of our leading government buildings, and the signs of the zodiac painted on the ceiling of our government buildings, and statues of people like Francis Bacon, who was a Rosicrucian, one of the founders of the Rosicrucian movement. So why is his statue or picture there in the Library of Congress? And until you understand the secret societies that really do exist, you can't understand anything going on today or what motivates the people who work and create terrible new diseases. Now, if you don't believe they do, go up on my website, RadioLiberty.com, pull down my section on genetic diseases. I think there are about 4 of them. We probably put them into a pamphlet one of these days. But we'll go to the fact that they actually have created new diseases. And most of this, of course, they cannot let you know. Go up on the Internet and try to get a copy of Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages. I just checked, the cheapest one's $71, and you get them up to $330. That's Zygmunt Brzezinski's book. And just find out that, yeah, they were planning almost 40 years ago to create these chronic new diseases and storms and droughts. Well, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We are under attack today. Please pray for Radio Liberty.